Let me just tell you, Doug, everything's right with the world because I have finally figured out where I'm going to plant my garden next year. I'm going to hire Zach to come down to my garden.
You should hire him. My gosh.
He's good.
They're making pickles.
I know.
Oh, and the cucumbers are taking over his garden, and the tomatoes are taking over.
The reason he's so good, there's one difference between he and I, and it's a word that I am very familiar with, and he's not, arthritis. So, anyway, he's Doug. I'm Rob. This is the Organic Gardener, special guest waiting in the wings. You could be the special winner of a $25 gift certificate from Sorgles if you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020. So on that note, DougOster.com, everything that is right with the world. Here he is for another edition of The Organic Gardener. Doug?
A little later, we're going to talk to Eric Countryman from the Davey Tree Expert Company all about how to support, how trees support butterflies and other pollinators. But right off the bat, I have a very special guest. When I was greeted by Kim Snow Gibson at Recipe for Hope, she had a big tomato for me as a gift, and this tomato has an amazing story, and I wanted her to tell it because any gardener will appreciate this. Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Hey, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing good. Kim and I have worked together for how many years would you think it is that we've worked together at Recipe for Hope?
19 years, Doug.
Oh, my gosh. And so let's. What made you bring this tomato in to, for me?
Well, okay, so because of our long friendship and because of our, just because you're the tomato guy, right? I had this tomato, it's an heirloom, and I had had it for years, but I knew you'd be, you'd like the story because you're a story guy.
So let's hear the story.
Well, you know, it took me all day to figure it out, but thanks to Gary Church from the Newcastle News, he straightened us all out, and that is my uncle, when he was younger, found a tomato somewhere, a tomato bush, but it was in, you know, it was in a farmer's field or something. He dug it up, took it home, and planted it, and when I was a kid, I remember going to his house, and he had these tomato plants that were larger than the gutters on his garage.
Oh,
so they were taller than that, and the tomatoes were huge, and they were so tasty, and it became dubbed the Jim Snow tomato. So he was a dentist in Newcastle, and he would share the seeds and the plants with his patients. So Gary Church, the Newcastle News guy, also had a greenhouse, so he would plant the plants for Uncle Jim. And then Uncle Jim would give them away. So turns out years later, they had a tomato eating contest that Gary Church sponsored at Wide Gardener's Greenhouse. And my Uncle Jim's tomato won first prize in a tasting contest. So fast forward, I'm in college, and my roommate turns out to be a distant cousin. I never knew her before, Marianne Sycophuse. And she and I realized that we both had Jim Snow tomatoes. And so she gave, or I had some seeds, and she had some seeds, and we both grew ours separately over the years. But her dad, Bill Sycophuse, is a farmer, and he had huge Jim Snow tomatoes. And so I'd lost track over the years and of my tomato seeds, and he gave me back some. So now between my roommate and I and her dad, we grow a lot of Jim Snow tomatoes.
And the roommate was from 1977, right? Is that when you guys?
Yeah, we met in 1976. We became roommates in 1977. And I hope my husband doesn't hear this, but I always say she's my favorite roommate.
Now, tell us about the tomato itself. Why do you like it so much?
It's so tasty. It's beefy. And it's good, like, to make a, you know, a BLT or just, we make a lot of salsa around here. It's really good in salsa, you know, and a tomato quiche. Anything you put it on, it just makes it so much better.
So one of the funny things, Kim and I were talking about this yesterday. When I got the tomato, it just had a little note on it and talking about who grew it and the things that it had won in the fair and stuff. And so Kim sent me the whole story. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. Well, I know Gary Church. I've known him for decades, and so I sent a message to him. Do you know about this tomato? Dr. Snow's son is also a dentist, and that's Gary's dentist. And
well, so funny. He has three sons that are dentists.
Oh, my. And so
yes.
Gary actually found the article that he wrote about this the tomato tasting. And here's the list of the winners. And I thought this was really interesting. Number one is the Doc Snow tomato. Number two is Mar Globe. That's an old-fashioned one. Number three is Potato Top. Number four is Pink. Number five is Early Girl. Number six is Hungarian Sweet. Number seven was Roman. And number eight, Mar Globe again, because these were all blind taste tests. Number nine, Potato Top again. And number 10 is Champion. And so I thought that was interesting because a lot of those tomatoes are still around today. I was always a big fan of Mar Globe and, of course, Potato Top. But just really cool, really fun. And I can't wait until my tomato gets fully ripe. Now, here's what we'd like to do, Kim. We'd like to get a few seeds at the end of the season so that some of these other gardeners that are listening can grow this tomato next year. We've got to perpetuate this variety, just like I'm perpetuating the Limbaugh Legacy Potato Top Tomato, the 3945, the tomato from World War II. We need to put this one on the list, too. So I'm hoping you and I can work on that and save some seeds at the end of the season, all right?
I will have a lot for you by the end of the season.
Oh, this is so exciting, and thank you very much for sharing your story. I just think it is just wonderful, and I guess we'll talk to you soon about these seeds, okay?
I'll talk to you soon, Doug.
Thanks, Kim.
Have a good day. Bye.
Oh, that was so much fun. If you have a story about some kind of family heirloom plant, I'd love to hear about it. Give us a call, 866-391-1020, because I have another story. And I love this time of the year being in the garden because, just like I was talking to Zach this morning, it is a jungle. And for me, for Zach, it's his cucumbers are overgrowing everything. For me, it's the Grandpa Ott morning glory. And I talk about this morning glory all the time. Some people might not like morning glories because they do kind of take over the garden at the end of the season like this, but I don't care. I let them do their thing, and climbing up an old windmill and climbing around in between my tomato plants. But I love the story on Grandpa Ott. And so this woman, her name, Diane Ott, and her grandfather, Baptist John Ott, on the evenings they would sit around on the porch, and the porch was covered in the front. They'd put up string, and the vines would be up there. And she recalls saving the seeds with her grandmother just to be sure that you'd have some for the next year, and about planting them when she was a kid, planting them in that front little bed in front of the porch. And it's a purple morning glory, which is really beautiful. And she started this thing called Seed Savers Exchange with her husband. And this was the first seed that they offered, called Grandpa. They named it Grandpa Ott. And the seeds came to America with Diane's great grandparents, which were immigrated from Bavaria. In my garden, the seeds just self-sow. And so I don't even worry about saving the seeds, but maybe I should. And it's just, like I said, it's a really dark purple morning glory with a white center, and I just love it. And in the mornings out in the garden, especially with these cool starts to the day, it's just wonderful. Real quick, something I talked about last week, I don't think I answered the question right. So somebody who's growing my Limbaugh Legacy Potato Top last week said, should I just cut off the tops? And I said, well, I'd wait a couple weeks, but it would be fine to cut those tops off now, because a potato top is never going to be enough time to put a tomato on there that's going to last, or that's going to come to fruition quick enough. All right.
We'll take a break. We'll take some calls on the other side, 866-391-1020. And 20 minutes away, Davey Tree, Talking Trees, KDKA. All right, a few things from Mr. Oster, then we'll get to your phone calls, 866-391-1020. So any gardening question, line up. He'll be getting to you in just a moment. Doug.
So at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden, they've got a great event coming up on Thursday. This guy from Ohio, Jim McCormick, he's a wonderful nature photographer and author, and he's lecturing on the mysterious world of moths. And then after the program, the group will go out in the garden and conduct a mothing to see what garden moths inhabit the garden. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. It's Thursday, August 29th, 7 to 9 p.m., $25 for members, $35 for non-members. Go to pittsburghbotanicgarden.org for more information. Joe Hamm, his rare daffodil bulb sale has begun. I sent my order in yesterday, and I got some from 1959, the year I was born, and I got some from the 1800s. If you want to grow something unique, beautiful, and different, all that information is at DougOster.com. And real quick, got a few seats left for Iceland in November, but I just announced that I'm heading back to England in May, taking gardeners to the Chelsea Flower Show, touring the gardens and the City of London, Chelsea Flower Show, St. Paul Cathedral, Westminster Abbey, Tower of London, Hampton Court Palace. One of my favorite gardens, Wisley, Savile Garden I love, and Sissonhurst Castle and Gardens, and much, much more. I would love for you to come with me. All that stuff's at DougOster.com. We've got some great garden videos there, too. All right, Rob, let's go to the phones.
All right, here we go. It's Tom. Tom, you're on the air with Doug Oster. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question about banana squash, and it might apply to other vines. But when you water it, I assume that the roots get the water and bring it up, but do the vines that are way far away from the plant, the soil where you water, do they absorb water from other places? Do
yes, the vines yes. If they're rooted, they are. That's one of the things that vines will do, is they'll, especially squash and pumpkins, they'll kind of, you know, they'll spread out like crazy. You have to be a vine wrangler, which Zach is finding out. You've got to keep those vines under control and keep them around the garden. And, yeah, when they root, they can get water that way, too.
So watering the vines would be a good idea.
If you could do it, you know, it just depends on the what kind of area that they're spreading to, with squash.
Right.
You know, it could be could overtake the neighbors. That would be tough to water. But if you can keep the vines close and you can see that they're rooted,
yeah,
if you can get some water on them, it will help. But they will also, they'll take water from the base of the plant,
right?
And it'll run all the way to the end of the vines,
right?
But that would help. So what? Tell me about your garden. It must be big if you're growing squash, right?
Well, this is like my fourth try. You know, the first one, somebody gave me a plant, nothing ever happened. Then last year, the deer got it. And this year, I've got probably maybe out of four plants, maybe about 15 or so butternut squash.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I planted Egyptian walking onions in the same areas as squash, so they're poking out of the, kind of double up the soil, so to speak, and but the leaves near the roots are starting, where I planted them, they're starting to turn yellow, and I'm just wondering, is that natural, or also is it just they're putting all the energy into producing the butternut squash itself?
That's what they'll do, and again, depending on how much water you're able to get on them,
right?
They're going to want a lot of water, and it's been very, very dry,
right?
And so, just a little bit of yellowness in there. It's no big, especially this late in the season. It's no big deal.
Also, I called you last week about my tomatoes that were volunteers, and you told me what to do. Well, the deer solved the problem. I thought I had them someplace where the deer wouldn't get to them. But
oh, man, those deer will drive you nuts.
So, the stems are still there, so I'll just keep them and see what happens. But I was shocked when I woke up in the morning and saw that.
Well, good luck with those squash.
Okay.
That's pretty good, getting that many.
All right, Danita from Squash to Pumpkins. She's calling from Irwin on KDK.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey.
Good morning. One second here. My grandson wanted to plant pumpkins, so we found a spot. We put pumpkin seeds in. We got this beautiful green stuff. We got some really gorgeous flowers. I have more flowers than some of the greenhouses out there, but I have no pumpkins. The flowers keep falling off. What's wrong?
Probably a pollination issue, and you can hand pollinate these. Oftentimes nowadays, if there isn't a pollinator, that's what will happen. When you're doing this pollination, you just need a little paintbrush. But you need to learn the difference between the female flower and the male flower. And so the female flower has a little pumpkin underneath it, very small. The male flower is just a straight flower. And usually both open up together in the morning. And then you take the pollen from the male flower and bring it over to the female flower. So look closely at those blossoms, especially in the morning. You know, as soon as we're done, done with the show, go on out and take a look at those flowers and see if you can see the female and the male. And you do the pollination. You do the work of the bee. And then you'll get your pumpkins. And there's still time to put pumpkins on. In fact, for a lot of people, the pumpkins come on too early. So give that a try, okay? And actually, if you start getting pumpkins, give me a call back so we know that it worked, all right?
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right. Tell them what you're talking about with Davey Tree.
Well, we're going to talk with Eric Countryman about how trees affect pollinators. And it's amazing. You know, we don't think of trees as a help for pollinators, but they provide habitat and food and all sorts of other benefits for the good bugs.
All right. Coming up, news 7:30. Next hour, it's from meatballs to meatloaf, ground meat recipes. 9 o'clock today, Nan Cohen, Good Folks, Dorothy's Candies and More, Total Talk. 10 o'clock, Accurate Solutions. And then Giant Show today on the Coons Market Black and Gold Sunday Show. Pirates Reds coming up later today. We'll look back at the Pirate Hall of Fame festivities. Jim Leland, Manny Sanguin, and the great Barry Bonds enshrined last night. Also, the Steelers lose their third consecutive preseason matchup, the final one of the year, but there were some bright spots with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. That's some college football news. And, of course, powered by Bowser, the High School Kickoff Classic Weekend. We'll recap it all today on the Coons Market Black and Gold Sunday Show after local news at 11 with your Pratt Pack on KDKA 100.1 FM, AM 1020.
We are joined again by Eric Countryman from the Davey Tree Expert Company. Today we are going to talk about how trees support butterflies and other pollinators. But Eric, tell me what else you've been seeing out there this season. What has been some of the problems and some of the good things that are going on with our trees?
Well, you know, I've been noticing that fall color is already starting in some of our trees here, you know, before September, which is usually a sign that we've had a pretty hot and dry summer, which I think we all know that we kind of have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a sign that maybe your trees could be under some stress from the weather, or maybe there's some problems with the root systems, but maybe not something to be real concerned about. A good idea to have an arborist check it out if you're really, you know, concerned.
Sure.
On good news is I think the spotted lanternfly population has been way down this year as compared to last year. So, I mean, that's a bright spot.
Definitely. So is there any way to guess about what kind of foliage we'll see this fall?
I don't have a good way to guess. I generally say if September is hot and dry, you're probably not going to get the best show. But if it cools off a bit and we get some rain, it could be pretty nice through October.
So a lot of people, me all included, a lot of times I don't think about trees as being a great way to help pollinators, but they are. You know, we're always thinking about native flowers and such like that, but trees do a great job at supporting butterflies and other pollinators, right?
Absolutely. I think sometimes people don't realize that every tree flowers in some shape or form. Maybe they're not all pretty, but they all generally, you know, do put out some kind of a flower. And not only that, but beyond just, you know, the flowers and the actual pollen, they provide a shelter. They provide protection for butterflies, for their caterpillars, for their eggs. And they can be a great habitat for pollinators as much as it's, you know, a food source.
Are there certain varieties that you can think about that might be better for pollinators, or do all trees basically, it's a positive?
I mean, I think you can notice sometimes trees like lindens, you know, when they have their big yellow flowers on, attract a lot of pollinators. Usually you'll see them just completely covered in bees. And I would say probably your more showy flower in trees and magnolias, tulip poplars I've seen, but, you know, but most usually have some reaction, you know, with pollinators or interaction.
I know I've read something that like an oak tree supports like 350 different types of butterfly species, that sort of thing. When you guys are thinking about planting trees somewhere, does that come into play? Are you thinking like, oh, this will be a great pollinator plant? Do you get much of that from people? Are they saying like, oh, I want something that's going to help the pollinators? Or is it more like, I need shade, I need beauty?
Definitely the latter is more of the push there. And you know, as you said, I think most of us think pollinator garden, we think native plants, flowers, you know, ground level stuff. But I would say, you know, having, you know, done a little research of this myself, I'd say if you're not incorporating a tree or something of some structure as part of your pollinator garden, you may not be giving your pollinators everything they need. Like I said, just the protection that a tree can provide and habitat for them, is just as important.
You know, it's funny you bring up the linden. I have a friend who used to work at Kennywood as a gardener. Her name's Nancy. She called in here and talked about the lindens. They have a area with a bunch of lindens, and they're very fragrant. But she says working under those lindens, it was too much. The fragrance was, the aroma was too much. That's why the pollinators are attracted to that tree.
Oh, yes. Yep. Absolutely.
And so since things have been so dry, let's talk a little bit about watering. Now, you know me, I've got this big giant oak forest, 4 acres of oaks, but smaller trees, I mean, I know they all need water, but all those trees, they're going to have to be on their own in the forest. But some of the more ornamental stuff, I want to put water on. And so let's talk a little bit about the right way to do that.
Well, the right way to water your trees is deep and slow and infrequent. So don't recommend daily watering. It's best maybe once, maybe twice a week if it's really, really hot and dry. But the best thing to do is to get a slow drip of water or a slow kind of flood of an area to penetrate deeper into the soil. Especially if you have a tree in your front yard where it's competing with grass or other plants, then it's really important to get the water, you know, as deep into the soil as you can. One of the best, easy, you know, ways to check is you don't have a soil probe where you can go into the ground. You can also just use a really big, long screwdriver. And if you can't stick it in the ground, and wiggle it around, that ground is probably way too dry, and then your tree's definitely begging for some water.
Yeah. This has been... What do you think about the season? I'm thinking, for me, this has been exceptionally hot and dry. We got a little period of rain there, but I saw the weather the other day, and they were looking at a little south of us, some severe, and west, severe drought conditions.
Yeah, you know, I haven't looked at what our kind of total rainfall is so far this summer, but I'd say when we have got rain, it's come down all at once, you know. Big, you know, quick storm that dumps a ton of rain doesn't really do much to water our plants or our trees. So I agree. I think it's been quite hot and quite dry, and it looks like this coming week we're in for another round of 90s and dry weather.
And as a tree expert, when you see that weather coming, what do you think? You're going to be doing more watering for people, or there's going to be more stress on the tree? What do you think from your professional point of view?
It definitely creates a lot of stress. And not only that, but you get stressed, the trees dry out, they drop a lot of leaves, and people then become quite concerned that their trees are sick. And, you know, sometimes it is just the best thing you can do is just put the, you know, start a regular watering schedule of, you know, once a week, get the hose out and really soak the area under your tree. It can make a world of difference. But there is some sort of study that as they get dry, they can get a little bit more brittle, and therefore could be a little bit more susceptible to storm damage. And that's, obviously a safety concern.
Yeah, and certainly when if they're really stressed out, that opens it up for insects and diseases and all sorts of other things. I remember several times throughout the last 30 years where you've got a, you know, really bad drought in the summer and the borers just go crazy on certain plants.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like our insect levels this year have been pretty good besides scale insects, which have been really horrible on trees. I think part of that is the weather. But it could lead to quite a lot of problems in the fall or, you know, because they're stressed out coming out of the winter, they could be more susceptible to our, you know, in spring invasions as well.
Well, we're getting close to planting time. So when we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about planting, about maybe some of your favorite trees. We always say right tree, right place. And, how to plant a tree. We should talk about that and why we're planting, you know, at this time of the year. Before we do break, give me one tree that you love more than any other tree that we should all be planting if we can find the right spot for it.
So, you know, there's actually it's one of my favorites because it's kind of more rare and it's one of the earliest flowering trees, and it's a cornelian cherry dogwood.
Mm.
Big yellow flowers, a pretty yellow flower shell comes out very early, kind of like when the forsythia pops, and you know spring is here. And that's the gray of the winter, it's like, oh, that's the break.
Yeah, how early does that one bloom? Because it is a real beauty.
It does depend on the weather, but, you know, March, I mean, it really can open up early. If we get a warm, I know we had a warm February this year, and I think I saw, you know, blossoms starting on some of them.
What kind of sunshade situation does it like?
It can take full sun, but I think it kind of does better in a, you know, maybe more of a dapple or a little bit more protected, like most dogwoods.
You know, I was sitting at Phipps once, and I didn't know what that tree was, and it was blooming, and it had those yellow flowers, and there were red cardinals in that tree, and it was just stunning, just a really great tree. All right, put on your thinking cap. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of your favorite trees and how to plant them. And hold on there for the break. Come on back, Eric. For more information about Davey Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davey.com/KDKA. And remember, you can always call the experts like Eric from Davey Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733.
All right, coming up, it is Coon's Cooking Hour, and who doesn't love a good burger? We're going to be talking ground meat recipes. Frank Dentisi en route to the studio, and he'll be with us after news at 8. But we'll come back after a quick look at sports brought to you by Coon's Quality Foods. And Doug and Eric take us to the top of the hour. If you have a tree-related question, 866-391-1020. All right, now look, if you have a tree-related question, you should call right now because we've got one of the best. Eric is here, of course, Davey Tree, talking trees. Number to dial is 866-391-1020. Doug.
Back with Eric Countryman. And so when we left, we heard about that amazing spring-blooming cornelian dogwood. Is that right? Did I say it right?
So, yeah, the common name is the cornelian cherry dogwood, but also known a lot as cornice moss,
okay,
which is more of a it's more formal name.
So planting time is coming. Right tree, right place. Let's talk a little bit about that, especially when we're thinking about the size of a tree when it gets to its mature size, because, you know, that you work, I'm sure, dealing with that mistake just about every other day.
Absolutely. Yeah, but lots of trees planted either under power lines, under the house drop lines, way too close to the house and the roof. Keeps us in business, keeps us busy.
And so know how big it's going to get when you put it in. Know what else should we know when we're putting a tree in about right tree, right place?
Well, I think, you know, sun exposure, it can be a big one, especially when we look at a summer like this, hot, dry, lots of sun. If it's a dogwood like we're talking about, probably not best to put it in an area where it's going to get blasted by the afternoon, you know, sun. They do better with, say, more of a morning sun where it's just a little bit more cool. I mean, that could be a big problem where you're just putting it in the wrong environment and the poor tree's just going to struggle.
And, you know, we talked about at the first segment about pollinators. Native trees have become a big deal too, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Native trees, you know, tend to be, you'd think, a little hardier. a little more adapted to our climate, but also just that way we, you know, keep away from invasive species and things that could, cause us trouble down the line.
So let's pick your brain a little bit. Couple more favorites.
So I've been, new favorite has been hornbeams. You know, very native. They're not necessarily, don't do a lot of flowering or anything particularly pretty, but they're hardy trees. They, you know, sometimes they're called ironwood. That's another kind of, you know, common name for them. And they tend to hold their leaves, brown leaves, but hold them like into the winter. And so they kind of have a bit of a winter interest. And then there's it's a cousin, has kind of shares the same name, but it's actually more of a birch family tree called the hop hornbeam. And it actually puts on, you know, kind of pendulant yellow flowers that kind of turn into these little cones on the tree and looks like hops. If you've ever seen a hop plant.
Yeah, that is a cool tree. I've seen one on the side of the lake and always wondered what it was because it does look exactly like hops. And so how big does that one get?
I would say they classify more as a medium-sized tree, mm-hmm. You know, the 30 to 40 foot tall, 20 to 30 foot spread kind of tree. But that would be at its maximum. They're not the fastest growing trees.
Full sun or part sun shade?
No, they like full sun.
Okay. Well, I was thinking about that one. I'm always putting in trees to replace the failing oaks, and I put in an American hornbeam. What else is on your list?
I'd say, for a big shade tree that kind of gets overlooked are tulip poplars. If you want a fast growing big tree, that's probably one of your best. Now, as they get older, they have kind of a known tendency to be a bit brittle, but you're talking, 50, 60 years from now. But as a starter tree, a lot of them are coming out, they come out of the nurseries with a really good upright, straight, single stem growth habit that's really, really good for trying to put a big shade tree in your yard quickly.
So is that like what I would call when I was a kid, the tulip tree with that kind of flower and the kind of the leaves the size of your hand? Is that a tulip poplar?
That's it. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I saw one at the nursery the other day that was variegated foliage. So I'm thinking about throwing that in somewhere into the forest.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be neat.
All right, Eric, as always, thanks. Really appreciate your time. For more information about Davy Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davy.com/KDK. And remember, you can always call the experts from Davy Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733. Now I've got a few seats left for that trip to Iceland in November and just announced that Gardens of London. I can't wait to get back there. All right, Rob, how are we doing on time?
We got about, I'll give you a minute.
Okay, well, get out there in the garden. Like I said, this is, to me, this the best time to be in the garden, especially early in the morning, late in the afternoon as things cool off. I'm glad that we have been, at least for now, out of that real hot spell. I saw the weather there. Might get a thunderstorm tonight. I could use some rain. I've been watering my containers. Don't forget also to fertilize those containers. That has made a big difference in my garden. And I'm using that stuff called Dramatic with two M's. But find a good liquid organic concentrate and put it on those containers because we still have at least a month and a half, 2 months of good time to grow your annuals. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
All right, there he goes, Doug Oster, DougOster.com. And now, let's strengthen up your wrist and forearm. We're going to start rolling some meatballs. Ground meat recipes. Moments away with Frank Dentisi on the Coons Cooking Hour. Right after Rob Taylor checks the news straight up at 8 o'clock. That's 3 minutes away with your Pratt Pack today on KDKA, 100.1 FM, AM 1020. And if you don't have the Odyssey app, get it free. Put it on your phone. Wherever you go, we go. AUDACY.